With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
What the world needs now is positivity. Connecting, relating, and being human together is where it's at. Hi there, Honey German, and I know life happens, but trust, you got this. And State Farm got us. It feels good knowing that State Farm agents are there to help you choose the right coverage with great support 24/7. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
So then you fly out.
So sure enough, they're flying me out. What's funny is that for the next 2 or 3 days, they're using me as the reader because they're continuing to read Bob's and Richie's and Donna's.
So you're reading with other Bob's and other Richie's?
Uh-huh. And all the Donna's. They flew me out. I guess they wanted to get, the best bang for their buck.
Do you remember who any of those people were? Did any of them pan out to have careers?
Yes. Helen Hunt, read for
No. Really?
Did not get it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She was great. I will say, and this is one of the few times I've ever said this, when I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie.
Huh. Why is that?
Because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
Welcome to More Than a Movie, a podcast that gives you a behind-the-scenes look at your favorite movies. I'm your host, Alex Fumero. Last season, we did a deep dive on American Me. This season, I'll focus on a different movie each episode, feature interviews with the biggest actors, directors, writers, and producers behind them, and tap into the history of Latinos in film. In my house growing up, there were two types of music playing: Cuban music and rock and roll. The playlist was not uncommonly the Rolling Stones or Rare Earth, followed by Cachao and Celia Cruz. But there wasn't a lot of music out there that bridged the gap between these two worlds for me, my American side and my Latino one, until I heard La Bamba. Little Alex would pull out the bongo drums. Yes, we really had bongo drums. And I'd bang away at them singing La Bamba offbeat at the top of my lungs or dancing around yelling arriba y arriba over and over again. While La Bamba is originally Mexican, not Cuban, it comes from Veracruz, where many of the songs had the same African influence as Cuban music had. So it sounded familiar. Except the version I was singing was not the Veracruzian folk song. It was the version I'd seen in the 1987 film by the same name about this rock and roll legend named Richie Valens, who also felt caught between his American life and his Latino one. And the film starred this Latino kid whose name was weirdly Lou Diamond Phillips. As it turns out, Lou wasn't technically Latino. He's Filipino, Native American, and a couple other things mixed in. But as anybody who lives in LA knows, Filipinos are just the Latinos of Asia. In fact, I learned to make my lechon skin extra crispy watching a Filipino dude on YouTube. So I was psyched when Lou said he'd join us on More Than a Movie to talk about how that iconic role changed his life. This whole episode is about how the coming together of cultures and of people can often produce the greatest work. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I am here with the most notable honorary Latino in the history of cinema. In fact, I think there's still probably a fair share of the audience that believes he's Latino. He is a legendary actor. You've seen him in everything from La Bamba to Stand and Deliver to Young Guns to, his IMDb goes on and on. Mr. Lou Diamond Phillips, thank you so much for being here.
It is absolutely my honor and my pleasure. It has always been my privilege to represent La Raza and, to be Latino adjacent.
I know technically you're on Team Asian, and I understand geographically why, but we share so much in common, right?
DNA. I mean, it's, we are the Latinos of the Pacific. And I think that's been one of the most interesting conundrums of categorizing Filipinos. And in this day and age, when people are hyper-focused on DNA and categorization and labels and whatnot, you know, the Philippines has always been a crossroads. And yes, you know, we are Asian influenced, we are Pacific Islander influenced, we are Indonesian influenced, but there's also a long, centuries long tradition of Spanish influence, mm-hmm. you know, so it's an interesting, you know, place to be. But it's also been, you know, one of the things that I've taken to heart in representing the Latino culture and doing it with pride and with respect, you know, the fact that I am at least physically, for lack of a better word, approvable in those roles, you know, and that the Latino directors and writers were the ones who chose me, you know, I've always felt justified in playing those roles.
So was the acting bug always there from a really young age, or when was the moment that you were like, I want to do this?
Well, you know, in sixth grade, I was still in the Philippines at the time on the Naval Air Station. I was born there, left, traveled around quite a bit, and then went back from 70 to 74. And I had a bunch of rambunctious, you know, young friends, and we were, you know, all a little precocious. And the teachers, I remember to this day, Ms. Greenberg and Ms. McGinn, made us write our own play. So we ripped off Charlie Brown. You know, I think the statute of limitations is, you know, used up by this point.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wrote myself all the best lines as Linus, and I got laughs. And, you know, that was when the bug bit. But then when I got down to Corpus Christi, discovered something called the University Interscholastic League, which, you know, in Texas, we actually compete in drama very much like, you know, you would compete in track or, you know, basketball or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so through junior high and high school, I was winning awards. And, you know, nothing like positive reinforcement to go, okay, you're good at something. And fell in love with it and decided this is what I was going to do for the rest of my life. Much to the chagrin of my, you know, high school counselor, my drama teacher who tried to talk me out of it.
Really?
And certainly parents. Yeah, no, they're like, what, are you kidding? You're a kid from a small town in Texas and you think you're going to be in the movies? And I was like, well, yeah, you know, and uh-huh. So I would not be deterred. And I majored in theater at the University of Texas at Arlington. And, you know, one thing led to another. And yeah, it all worked out okay.
I'm curious, like, you know, before La Bamba hits, and we'll get to talking about La Bamba, obviously, but like, you know, I know you did a film called Trespasses, right? Before La Bamba. You were involved behind the camera as well.
It was okay. So the little tiny Christian youth film was called Angel Alley. For the next few years, I supported myself as an actor, not only with theater, but with a comedy troupe called The Zero Hour, which would do midnight shows on Fridays and Saturdays. I hooked up with a man named Adam Rourke, who became my film mentor. And so he opened up something called the Film Actors Lab in Dallas, and I was one of his first students, trained specifically for film. The whole philosophy of the Film Actors Lab was take what you've learned in college or in other acting classes, whether it's your Meisner or your Stella Adler or, you know, any of this stuff, and apply it to how do you hit your marks? How do you match? How do you play a close-up versus a master? How do you tell a story out of order? You know, because in a play, you get to go from beginning to end. So it was all of the brass tacks of being an actor on film.
And you were doing this in college?
I was doing concurrently while I was in college.
Wow.
Still doing college plays, still doing professional plays. And, you know, landing things, you know, like on the Dallas show. At the time, Texas was a right-to-work state. So they were doing, I mean, my second job was literally a really, really bad TV movie called Time Bomb that we called Stink Bomb. But I've been friends with Billy Dee Williams and Morgan Fairchild ever since.
Wow.
And, yeah, I mean, it was an incredibly formative period, you know, in my life. And that the Trespasses credit actually came about because right after Tender Mercies, there was a rancher who, like many people, you know, saw Duvall's performance and said, well, he's not doing anything, uh-huh. you know, and then they go, well, I can do that. He mortgaged his ranch. He made this really, really bad film. And couldn't sell it, you know, he was out $1 million and, you know, I had heard about Adam in the Film Actors Lab in Dallas, came to us, showed us the movie, said, I have a distributor who will actually give me the money back for this and distribute it, get this, if I can put in two fight scenes and a rape.
What?
I was like, wow. And I was writing all of the...
Is that just like treading on old Western tropes? Like, what was that
exactly.
about? Got it.
100%. You know, and so literally it was my first and greatest, one of my greatest exercises in a postmortem and how to make a movie work. Because I saw the original film, I got to see all the outtakes, obviously the script. And this is 2 years later. And, you know, things like, oh my goodness, the girl who was 9 then is now 11 and has sprouted 6 inches. We have to put her in a car accident and a full body cast, you know. So literally coming up with really, really practical ways to make the movie work. And it's still not a good movie, but, you know, it got sold. And, you know, I appeared in it. Adam appeared in it. I'm credited as a, you know, as a screenwriter in it.
And it sounds like it was a little bit of your film school. I mean, I've heard people say, like, the best film school is making a bad movie. You know,
yeah,
or making a movie, but they just usually turn out bad when it's your first.
Exactly.
And so with La Bamba, I've heard you say, you know, it sort of shot you out of a cannon. But what I'm hearing is there was, you know, as there usually is, like all these years of sort of invisible preparation that gets you ready for that moment when La Bamba calls.
100%. And I have said this to young acting students. As a matter of fact, I just went back to my alma mater, the University of Texas at Arlington, and I taught a week-long residency there, not only to the theater students, but the musical theater students and the film students. And once again, it's like, you can't sort of look at what happened to me out of context and go, oh my gosh, she's an overnight success. Mm-hmm. Because as you said, I was working in the film business and teaching for 4 years and writing prior to, you know, La Bamba coming along. And there is an inordinate amount of luck that has to happen to you in your career. You have to be in the right place at the right time. But as you said, when that moment comes, you have to be prepared.
Yeah.
Because if you whiff that opportunity, it's going to be a while before it comes back around.
We'll be back after the break.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I often get asked why I'm such a big fan of wrestling. And it's all thanks to my grandma. Growing up, we would watch matches together, and that bond turned me into a lifelong fan. Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr., and on my podcast, Wrestling with Freddie, we know how important it is to have the right teammate, because things can get pretty tricky quick. So, when things get complicated and you need help, State Farm gives you options. They show you what's possible for ensuring what matters to you. One of the things that matters to me, sharing memories and revisiting wrestling's greatest moments. And with State Farm's support of the My Cultura podcast network, I get to do just that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome back to More Than a Movie. I'm your host, Alex Fumero, and we are talking to Lou Diamond Phillips about how exactly he landed the role that would change his life forever. So I'm curious, you know, leading into La Bamba, you initially auditioned for the part of Bob, which eventually goes to Isai Morales. Do you remember getting that call, those signs? What is, like, you know, what's the kind of earliest moment that you remember, like, hey, they're doing a movie about this guy, Richie Valens, who's not quite as famous as Buddy Holly. He's not quite Elvis, right? Like, you know, what was that first, like, moment?
Well, it was totally, it was a mistake. It wasn't, it did not happen that kind of way. I mean, back in the day, man, you used to not get the sides until you got to the audition.
Just cold reading.
It was a cold reading. You know, if you were smart and you got there an hour early and you would sit and review them before you had to go in. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I'm teaching at the Film Actors Lab. I get a call from my agency. They know I also do legit theater.
Which was an agency based in Dallas at that time. So this, we're talking about a regional talent agency.
A regional talent agency, a regional casting director, Rhody Kent, who was wonderful, who put me in the Dallas series and also a couple of other television movies and whatnot. You know, there weren't a whole lot of guys that looked like me.
Right.
You know? So, yeah. So I'm an ethnic guy in a sea of, you know, good looking young white guys who, you know, end up on the Dallas series. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to joke that I'd keep a red bandana and a switchblade in my car for auditions because that's usually what I got called for. You know, hey, you might want to cut you, you know.
The unfortunate story of almost every brown actor, I feel like.
Exactly. You know, but I got a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And once again, that's a training ground. So now I get this call from my agency, and it's the agent's assistant. She goes, yeah, it's a musical about Frankie Valli. And, right? And, you know, and now, of course, there's Jersey Boys, which makes all the sense in the world. But at the time, there wasn't.
You're like, how do I fit into, how does my
Cherokee,
Filipino looking... Yep. Yes, fit in this film.
Yeah, all of that, right?
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, screw it. You know, I'll audition for that.
Yeah, what do you have to lose?
And so to make matters worse, what sort of, I don't know, seemed to justify that was that the actual audition was in a legit theater in downtown Dallas.
Oh, wow.
You know? So I get there.
Which is lucky because you're very comfortable on the stage at this point because you've been doing local theater productions.
Exactly. Tons. So it's all good. So I go to this audition. And I walk in the door, and there are these people I've never seen before. Phyllis Sparza, the associate producer, Junie Lowry, L.A. casting director, and a couple of other people.
Was Taylor Hackford there?
No, neither Taylor was there.
And Luis Valdez was not there.
Nor Danny Valdez.
Right.
But coming to Texas was Danny Valdez's idea, because they'd already done L.A., Chicago, New York.
And Miami, as I understand it.
I believe so.
Yeah.
When all was said and done, they saw 600 people. So they hand me the sides, and immediately I'm going, this is a movie.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at this, and then Phil and Junie explain it. This is a biopic about Richie Valens. And I'm like, oh, you know.
You knew who Richie Valens was at the very least?
Yes. Yes, in broad strokes.
Right, like right? The guy who did La Bamba, probably like that,
yes,
broad,
exactly,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And died in the plane crash with Buddy Holly. So now they start filling in the blanks. So I actually go on tape. Well, here's the thing. You come in and you read first. Okay, they had me read for both roles. There's about a dozen guys there from, you know, swarthy Caucasians to, you know, real Latino, you know, dudes and mm-hmm. maybe a light-skinned African-American or two. Mm-hmm. All right?
Right.
So, you know, I mean, it's Dallas. So they read me for Bob first, you know, maybe because of my resume, I don't know. Then they read me for Richie, and Junie came out and she goes, I'm not supposed to do this, but can you wait until the end of the rest of the auditions? And I'm like, oh, okay, sure, of course, yeah. You know? So I'm hanging out, you know, for like 4 hours looking at all these things and, you know, actually get a chance to memorize the stuff. And the reason they asked me to wait is to put me on tape at the end of the day. So they put, I think, me and one other guy on videotape at the end of that day after seeing like a dozen people for both roles. And Junie at the end of the day says, I'm not supposed to do this either. Here's the full script.
Wow.
You're probably going to be hearing from us, you know? So she gives me the full script. I go home that night. And now there are very few opportunities in life where you go, this is the big one.
Yeah.
I read that and I went, this is the big one. This is the big one.
When you said that to yourself, are you thinking I'm auditioning for Richie? or are you thinking I'm auditioning for
either
Bob?
One?
Either one.
Either
so
one.
So you don't know the part. You're just looking at the movie and going, this is the break.
Yeah, this is the break.
And that casting director must have loved you to say that because she hadn't even really, the main producers hadn't even seen you. So she's saying, I'm going to go to bat is what she's saying.
That's exactly. So at any rate, I get the call. And the funny thing is Rhodey Kent calls me and she goes, okay, you got a problem. I said, what's that? I had landed a TV movie with Dabney Coleman, like 3 or 4 scenes, really good scenes, right? That would cover my rent.
Yeah.
All right. She goes, but they want you to go to LA to continue to audition for La Bamba during the same time. So to go to LA, you're going to have to turn down The Sure Thing. What do you want to do?
Wow.
Yeah. So obviously I rolled the dice. Now, my mentor, Adam Rourke, he was a realist, man. He was such a practical dude. He's from Brooklyn. Uh-huh. He goes, Luke, you go out there, you kick their ass. There's not a snowball's chance in hell you get neither one of these roles, but go out there and impress them and maybe you play the drummer.
Uh-huh. That's great.
You know?
Yeah.
So, hey, I mean,
he's not wrong, right? I mean, this
he's
is
not
sort of,
wrong.
That's why I said, wow, when you said that, because it's like, it's so rare that you get 3 or 4 meaty scenes that'll pay your bills. You know, I mean, that's like, you know, you're teaching acting classes, like trying to make ends meet. And here comes a paycheck and an opportunity. And you had the balls to say no, but you had an intuition. It sounds like about it. You felt you could feel something was different about this. Or you were just a gambler? Because I know you like to play poker.
Yeah, there is that, but not in life.
I know you're a pretty good poker player, you know. So
to do, you know, the gambler parlance, I was betting on myself. You know, just like everybody trying to talk me out of majoring in theater in college, I knew that I could do this. I knew that I was destined to do this. I knew this was an opportunity to prove that I could go to the big leagues.
Right.
You know, and I obviously had done so well in my audition that Junie was willing to, you know, stick her neck out and say, we'll be in touch, which they never do.
Yeah.
You know, I knew I had nailed the initial audition and could only, you know, either improve upon it or screw it up, which, you know, wasn't really in my playbook.
Para bailar La Bamba, se necesita un poquito de advertising money. Un poquito de advertising money con comerciales para usted y para mí. We'll be back after the break.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events... You'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I often get asked why I'm such a big fan of wrestling. And it's all thanks to my grandma. Growing up, we would watch matches together. And that bond turned me into a lifelong fan. Hi, I'm Freddie Prinze Jr. And on my podcast, Wrestling with Freddie, we know how important it is to have the right teammate. Because things can get pretty tricky quick. So, when things get complicated and you need help, State Farm gives you options. They show you what's possible for ensuring what matters to you. One of the things that matters to me? Sharing memories and revisiting wrestling's greatest moments. And with State Farm's support of the My Cultura Podcast Network, I get to do just that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Listen to new episodes of your favorite My Cultura shows. Wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve.
with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Bienvenidos de nuevo, amigos, to More Than a Movie. We're here talking about La Bamba with our guest, Lou Diamond Phillips. So then you fly out. Do you remember landing? Had you ever been to LA before?
Strangely enough, I had gone the year before because I heard of a couple of other auditions, one of which was Platoon. And I couldn't even get in the door because I didn't have an LA agent.
Right.
Couldn't even get in the door. So I,
you know, but this time you're showing up, they're flying you out to LA. So
exactly. Which is the same thing. You know, I mean, too many kids get off the bus starry eyed thinking that, you know, they're going to walk in and knock people's socks off. You can't even get in the building sometimes, man. You know? So sure enough, they're flying me out. What's funny is that for the next two or three days, they're using me as the reader because they're continuing to read Bob's and Richie's and Donna's.
So you're reading with other Bob's and other Richie's?
Uh-huh. And all the Donna's. They flew me out. I guess they wanted to get, you know, the best bang for their buck.
Do you remember who any of those people were? Did any of them pan out to have careers?
Yes. Helen Hunt read for
No.
me.
Really?
Did not get it. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. She was great. Maybe a little too mature.
Yeah.
She just was so grounded. So grounded. Gave a great audition. Didn't have the kind of naivete, I think, that Luis was looking for. Most of the Richie's, no. I will say, and this is one of the few times I've ever said this, when I walked in, I didn't think I had a shot at Richie.
Huh. Why is that?
Because John Stamos's picture was already up on the wall.
No, stop it.
Yeah.
Are you being for Richie?
Yeah, I guess. It was just up on the wall. I don't know. I never asked about it.
And you looked at it and you said, that's a very handsome man. That's an undeniably handsome man on that wall.
I did. I did. And I could see him in a pompadour. Yeah. You know?
With that hair, so, I mean, you have great hair, but you know, there's great hair and there's Stamos hair.
Yeah, exactly. That's a museum mullet.
That's a right museum there. Mullet. That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. Substitute Beach Boy hair. Yeah,
exactly.
So you are sitting in this room,
yeah,
like an unofficial employee of the production, reading with all these people.
Yes.
But that must have also been an advantage because you're just going over it, right?
That is exactly right, my friend. I heard every single direction that Luis gave to people for Bob and for Richie. And I'm taking mental notes, right?
Yep.
So then they read me for Bob with somebody else who's coming in for reading Richie. And then I remember that night, this was a Tuesday. I think they flew me out over the weekend previous, like Sunday. And Luis Valdez passes me in the hall where I'm sitting on a chair in the hallway. And he goes, Lou, tomorrow you read for Richie. And I'm like, oh my God. Now, I put all my thought and energy into Bob because I thought that Richie was unavailable. So I thought, okay, well, maybe there's still a shot. And I remember walking down La Cienega Boulevard and passing a fruit stand. Mm-hmm. And I bought a thing of blueberries because I'd read once that Tim Hutton, used to keep blueberries with him because he had an ulcer. And so I thought, okay, fine. You know, if Oscar Leonard Tim Hutton likes blueberries, I'm going to have some blueberries.
Cool.
You know?
Yeah.
And I had an epiphany. I had an epiphany walking down La Cienega Boulevard. It's like, I don't have to prepare to be Richie. I am Richie. I'm a kid with big dreams, with, you know, a mountain of things against him, an unknown ethnic kid, you know, middle-class family. You know, I don't have to act those dreams. I have those dreams. Just go in and be me.
So you had that epiphany.
Yeah.
You walk in for your Richie audition. Now you know they're really looking at you for this. And what does that consist of?
Once again, I just read. And that night, you know, Luis Valdez tells me on a Wednesday night, okay, I'm going to screen test you tomorrow.
Wow.
It's like, and they screen tested me. And yet again, there was one other person left. You know, I had already done a read with Esai. It was very obvious to me that he was going to be the guy.
Huh.
So I show up, there's yet another guy, a soap opera guy that I hadn't heard of, I guess, you know, I don't know why politically he was there, but Esai, Danielle von Zernick, Elizabeth Pena, and Rosana DeSoto were all screen testing without competition.
Wow.
So I felt like they were just getting approved.
Yeah.
So what's interesting is that the very next morning, Friday, I go back in, I get called back in to read some more Donnas because they weren't totally sold, you know? And so I go back in, I read with another, you know, eight Donnas in the morning. And what's weird is throughout that week, I had become very, very friendly with the office staff, right? They were all so nice to me. I go in that morning and nobody talks to me. As a matter of fact, I can see them consciously not making eye contact. And I'm thinking, oh, shit, I didn't get it. I didn't get it. And they feel bad. You know? So around 11:30, Luis Valdez goes out. He maybe to the bathroom, comes back and he goes, Luke, come into my office. You know, so I go into the office and there's Junie, there's Danny Valdez, Luis, Taylor Hackford. And they sit me down and I think, okay, here it is, you know. And Luis pulls up a chair like right in front of me. And he says, Lou, how would you like to play Richie Valens? And, you know, I burst into tears.
Oh.
They were just waiting for Columbia to approve the screen test. And that's why nobody wanted to talk to me because they all knew I was first choice. They just needed to wait until Columbia said yes. And literally, Junie and Luis took me to lunch. They had already booked me a flight back to Dallas because I packed for 4 days or whatever.
Right.
I had to go back, pack a full suitcase, be back that next Sunday night and, you know, and start rehearsal for a week and then filming the week after. So, yeah.
So, I mean, man, what a life-changing experience. Now, we've mentioned Luis Valdez a few times. We spoke with Luis. We also got the opportunity to interview Taylor as well. What did you know about Luis Valdez going into this? Because you're from Texas, not from California, where, you know, Luis is known as the author of Zoot Suit, the co-founder of Teatro Campesino, the guy who broke Edward James Olmos's career, right? Like, what did you know going into this about him? By the way, this is pre-internet, guys, so there's not a Google search that can be done, you know?
No, 100%. So yeah, that week alone that where I had, you know, a 3 foot tall stack of material on Richie and videos and a little bit of a video, and I had to learn guitar in a week. I had to learn 16 songs because I don't play. I still don't play.
Wow.
Yeah, no, it was a very, very intense week. But in that week, I also got a massive education in Luis Valdez. Now, I was already familiar with Zoot Suit.
Because it had been performed in Texas?
It was on Broadway. It was you know, fairly famous at that point. I had not seen it. I was aware of it. Yeah. I was also obviously aware of Edward James Olmos, big fan of his on Miami Vice.
Yeah.
Right? Massive. You know, there's a guy who looks like me on TV. So I became incredibly grateful because in the first couple of years of being in Hollywood, being with Luis Valdez, being with Danny Valdez, being with people from the Teatro Campesino, being with people who were activists, Edward James Olmos, a number of these people who believed in advancing opportunities for people. These were my comrades. Through Luis and Danny, I fasted for and marched with Cesar Chavez.
Wow.
You know, hung out with, the Kennedys and with Reverend Jesse Jackson and, you know, just a number of people. I mean, it used to be, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, we called the usual suspects because whether it was for El Rescate or Amnesty International or Oxfam or any of these, there were, you know, the same people that always showed up, you know,
right.
Eddie Olmos, Jackson Brown and Ed Harris and, you know, a number of those people who were really amazing and committed to social change,
yeah.
You know. And so, because both those films had at its heart equality and the American dream and, you know, working for it and opening doors, it naturally led itself to reflecting that in life. I did that in college. I did that in high school. You know, I was president of the student council. I was, you know, in the Kiwanis Club. I went to Boy State, the leadership forum in Austin. You know, I mean, I was involved and an activist long before this came along. This gave me an opportunity to do it on a very, very large scale.
And you shot in those worlds, right? In La Bamba. Like it wasn't
yes.
a film that where the was sort of things were recreated on set. You know, I mean, there was, but I mean, there were scenes that happened in very natural settings. Can you talk a little bit about, tell me.
First week, very first week we went to Watsonville, they had reserved an area of the apricot orchard for us to be able to film in and pick, you know. The thing that I left out about the screen test is when I was standing outside, I used to smoke. I don't anymore, but I was having a cigarette, you know, while the other guy was in there. But as I'm standing outside the soundstage, this red T-bird pulls up with a dude with a leather jacket and a, you know, guinea tee and wrap around Balarama sunglasses. And, you know, he gets out of the car, looks at me and gives me one of those. And I went, oh my God, that's the real Bob Morales.
And it was. Right.
And when I got back from Texas on that Sunday night after packing, Bob Morales picked me up at the airport and took me to the house that Richie bought his mom, Connie. And I met Mama Connie, Connie Jr., Irma, Mario. I met the whole family, Rosie. I met everybody that night. I stayed in that house.
You stayed in the house. Wow.
I stayed in that house that night, you know, and they were a part of every day of rehearsal. They were a part of every day of filming. We got very, very close. And on the very, very first day of filming in Watsonville, my pickup time for the van is 6:30. But at like 5:45, there's this banging on my door. And it's Connie, Richie's mom, going, Richie, it's time to go to work. And that's the way it was for the entire shoot.
Wow. I've heard you talk about this a little bit, about how, unlike playing someone like Buddy Holly or Elvis, right, where they all were already household names.
Yes.
There wasn't that kind of weight on you. It was a different kind of pressure that was related to this very real young man's family being around you all the time, sort of watching you. I mean, the mom, you know, Connie called you Richie that morning, right?
Yeah. The whole family did. Every day of the shooting.
Respectfully, like, to them, but like, was that ever weird? I mean, you know, we're talking about someone whose son passed away tragically.
No. For me, it was validation.
It was. Okay.
For me, it was validation. You know, it was like, okay, I'm on the right track. The one time I was not called Richie was the night we were filming him getting on the plane. And we shot it at Burbank Airport. Fake snow, huge wind machines blowing, plastic snow everywhere.
Yeah.
Hot as hell, but I'm in a freaking fur coat. And Richie's supposed to be sick.
Right.
And Taylor and Luis had cautioned the family to not come that night. But Connie came.
Oh.
Yeah. Connie came and they're touching my makeup up literally on the runway. And Connie walks up and I can see that she's already, there's, you know, something wrong. And I know immediately that there is something wrong because she says, Lou, can I ask you something? And I went, oh my goodness, what have I done? She's calling me Lou. What's going on? I said, Connie, of course. And I stood up and she collapses into my arms.
Oh.
And she starts pounding on my chest going, why did you go? Why did you have to go? And 30 years, man, 30 years of her holding on to that. And in that moment to be able to have that catharsis, because she was 12 when Richie passed. So she had very, very vivid memories of it. And, you know, we were able to give her that moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
Incredible. I think that's a good segue into the legacy, right? For you to step into that role and revive that legacy in that way. You can't prove this statistically, but my gut is that he became a household name because of that movie, you know?
Yeah.
Again, right? Like, it was a whole new generation. So I wonder, like, what's crazy is, like, right after that movie, I feel like you did two other huge movies. So then it was like, you did that. And then it was like, it wasn't like there was a lull. It was like Stand and Deliver and Young Guns, right? Like,
my first three films in Hollywood.
Nuts. That's insane.
I mean, to be honest, I even to this day, I don't know if it gets celebrated the way it should be, you know, both of those films.
Yeah.
You know, we now have, you know, awareness. We now have, you know, a desire to be inclusive. There's a grassroots movement to support films, you know, with performers and directors and writers of color.
Yeah.
Didn't exist back then.
Right.
We were pioneers. Yeah. Not to pat myself on the back too much, but, you know, both of those films are in the National Registry of films for their contribution to the culture of America.
Yeah.
And yet Stand and Deliver gets one Oscar nomination. We swept the Independent Spirit Awards.
Mm-hmm.
La Bamba doesn't get one. Okay. It'd be a different story today. But then again, I probably wouldn't be cast in those films today. So what's interesting is it takes a full year for La Bamba to come out. I got paid scale, about $6,000, and I gave half of that to my mother.
Wow.
Just like what she would. Yeah. We filmed it in June and July of 86. Come December of that year, I'm almost out of money. I got to go back to Texas. Nobody is casting me in movies because I'm an unknown kid from Texas playing, as you said, an obscure Mexican-American rock and roller,
right?
You know, who's a footnote in Buddy Holly's story in a $6 million negative pickup film through Columbia. It does not have blockbuster written on it.
Right.
Okay.
And there aren't a ton of roles being written for guys who look like you.
No.
In the 1980s.
No. So I'm not getting in the door on any of them. Okay. So in December of that year, I land an episode of Miami Vice, which is going to pay me as much as La Bamba did. Okay. In that episode called Red Tape, Viggo Mortensen is my partner and Annette Bening is the girlfriend of the bad guy.
Ah.
Okay. And I have one scene with Edward James Olmos. Now, Eddie was supposed to do a cameo in La Bamba as Isai's father, you know, because Richie and Bob had different fathers.
Yeah.
Okay. But it didn't work out. So he's very, very aware of the film.
Right.
And he's very aware that I'm the kid that got the role. So we have one scene together. At the end of the scene, Eddie says to me, "What are you doing next month?" And I went, this is January. I went, "You want to have lunch? I'll be in LA, you know." He goes, "All right, here. When you get back to LA, call this number. I'm doing a film. You need to be in it." And that's how I got into Stand and Deliver.
Well, I think that's a great place to end because that's like a whole other movie we would need to do a whole episode on.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much, Alex. What a wonderful conversation.
Same here, man. Really appreciate your time.
You bet.
Take care. That's our show. Next week, before Lou Diamond Phillips was ever even aware of a Richie Valens movie, somebody had to convince Richie's family to trust them with the story and attach a director and get the money to tell it. And who better than the guy who would go on to direct the Academy Award-winning film Ray to bring this young rock icon to life. I'll speak to producer Taylor Hackford about what it takes to get a movie made that doesn't star white people and how to be a good ally next time on More Than a Movie. More Than a Movie Season 2 was produced by Chloe Tagliagambe with the help of Reynolds Gutierrez and Veronica Hernandez in partnership with iHeart's My Cultura Podcast Network. Hosted by me, Alex Fumero. Edited by Rose Reed and Chloe Tagliagambe with the help of Saida Quevedo. Executive producers are Carmen Graterol, Rose Reed, Isaac Lee, and me, Alex Fumero. Sound design by Gonzalo Messi. Original music by Golden Minds, Darko, and IME. Recorded at JTB Studios and Vaudeville Sound. Our executive producers at iHeart are Giselle Bansis and Arlene Santana. For more My Cultura podcasts, listen to the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.